It's crazy that in America that there is even a state that has allowed this to go on. How did it come about? I mean, was it, do you think it was just sort of slipped through the system, or was it more nefarious than that? What's the history
Of this particular veto, or?
Yeah, well, of the, I guess the original one. Like, what was the purpose of it? Was it just kind of a mess up, or?
Yeah, so it really, I mean, going all the way back to 1930 when this was adopted, I think the original drafting file of the senator who requested the amendment be drafted, it was very simple. He just said, I want an amendment that would allow the governor to veto items of appropriation. That's how everything always starts. And then the legislative drafters put the bill together, which kind of takes with that request and puts it into the language that we now find in our Constitution that says a governor could veto an appropriation bill in whole or part.
Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential. And here's your host, Jeff Crank.
Appreciate you joining us. You know, as citizens head to the polls to cast their votes in favor of the candidates who they think will represent their values and entrusting them to advocate on their behalf in all levels of government, from local to federal. The United States was established as a republic in response to the founders' firsthand experience with centralized power in the hands of a single individual and recognizing how it does not serve the best interests of the people. Now, even though it's been almost 250 years since the founding of our nation, there is one state's governor who, by the stroke of a pen, raised property taxes without legislative approval. Now, this property tax increase won't just affect this generation, but multiple generations to come. So does this governor really have the authority to raise property taxes for the next four centuries? Can this property tax be reversed? And can the people of the state do anything to make sure this doesn't happen again? I want to welcome today's guest, Lucas Weber, who is deputy counsel for Wisconsin Institute for Liberty and Law. Lucas, thanks for being with us. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So first of all, before we get into all of this, I understand I want to hear about this because I'm born and raised in Colorado and I'm very bad at skiing. I've only done it one time, but you're a member of the National Ski Patrol, from what I understand.
I am. Yeah, that's correct. Right here in Wisconsin. Southeast Wisconsin has some smaller hills, certainly a little smaller than you'd be used to in Colorado, but skiing is very popular here and it's a fun thing I get to do every winter.
Now, how'd you get on the National Ski Patrol?
You know, just always had an interest in skiing. Was spending way too much money on lift tickets, and joining the patrol was a great way to ski for free.
Sure. Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Wisconsin Institute for Liberty and Law and what you focus on. What's kind of some of the biggest things that you've done, the biggest wins you've had throughout the year?
Yeah, so it's we're the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit law and policy center here in Wisconsin. We represent clients in state and federal court on areas that advance individual liberty, constitutional government, and a robust civil society. So some of the larger wins that we've had, we've defended a university professor, successfully defended a university professor on free speech grounds. They were trying to terminate him for a blog that he had. We represented him and took that all the way up to the state Supreme Court and won. We've also won challenging some of the governor's line item vetoes here in Wisconsin. We've won cases there. We've everything else from First Amendment cases to parental rights and I guess everything in between. We've won a variety of cases at the state and federal level here in Wisconsin and beyond.
Well, thank goodness that you're there and you're defending some of these things. We need organizations just like yours, and I'm sure you also work a lot with Americans for Prosperity on some of these topics as well, though you focus more kind of on the judicial side, it sounds like, as well.
Yeah, so I'm one of the lawyers here. I have been fortunate enough to work with our friends at Americans for Prosperity on a variety of policy proposals here in Wisconsin that have come forward. And oftentimes we'll sort of lend our legal expertise and kind of combine that with some of the fine work they do to help achieve results that improve individual liberty and freedom for everybody.
Now, people who have any basic understanding of the U.S. Constitution, the separation of powers, and how our founders wanted to diffuse power so that we didn't have a king deciding for everyone what the laws would be, kind of would find it hard to believe that the governor of Wisconsin was able to raise property taxes for the next 402 years without legislative approval. Now, explain what happened in Wisconsin and how the governor was able to do that.
Yeah, so our governor here in Wisconsin has the most powerful veto pen in America. It hasn't always been that way, but he was given the governor was given certain powers via amendment back in the 1930s. And our governor now used that veto pen last summer as part of the state budget process. So what the governor did was he took language the legislature had passed that related to increasing spending authority for the next two school years. So it said for the 2023-24 school year and the 2024-25 school year, that they were going to be allowed to increase, school districts would be allowed to increase their spending. What the governor did was he vetoed the dash and the 24, and he came up with, so he basically made it so that it was for the 2023 to the 2425 school year that this increase would happen annually. As a result, we're looking at billions of dollars in property tax increases that the legislature never intended, that the people of Wisconsin don't want. But it was all done via line item veto power. That's not a piece of law that passed the legislature in those with those words. It's certainly not what the people of Wisconsin intended when their representative passed those. But that is currently the law here in Wisconsin.
And the governor intentionally did this.
Correct. Yeah. So the governor, like I said, the governor in Wisconsin has a very powerful veto pen. So it wasn't always that way. At statehood, yeah,
a king-like veto power.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, it's an absolute monarch. Essentially, it's any bill that deals with appropriations essentially is open to line item veto by our governor. Now,
Let me stop you there a second, because there's lots of people who argue that a line item veto is a good thing, and in fact, I think a lot of people would make the argument that, for instance, the President of the United States should have a line item veto. But I think what they intend that to be is where a president could say, well, I'm going to sign this bill, but this one provision or this one, you know, spending project, I'm going to line item veto that and not do that. But this is more sinister, I would say, than that. I mean, this is literally where he could scratch out, say, if a word said without, he could scratch out OUT and just the word would then be with. I mean, he can literally change the words in a bill. Yes.
Yeah, he used to be able to do more. So the background on our veto, the line item veto, and you are correct. In most cases, most states have an item veto, line item veto, where the governor can veto items, you know, whole sections of a bill. But here in Wisconsin, it's a lot more into the minutia. As it was originally drafted, the governor was able to strike individual letters, individual words that could combine sentences. Through litigation and further amendments, the people of Wisconsin have actually clawed back a lot of that power because of the abuse of governors over the years. So as I was saying, in 1930 is when we first adopted our original line item veto amendment, which gave the governor the power to approve a bill in whole or part. That dealt with appropriations. And that was all kind of a long time building. It was really the progressive era, which unfortunately was founded here in Wisconsin, was growing the size of government. They could no longer do one-off bills to fund agencies. They started combining them into omnibus bills because it was just easier for them to fund this massive leviathan of government. But people started getting upset. There just wasn't enough time to review everything in it. The governors wanted more power to be able to strike items from the bills. And ultimately, the people of Wisconsin adopted an amendment in 1930 to give them that power. It wasn't used much for about 40 years until the 70s, when governors really started diving in. So the first abuse that we'll call it here in Wisconsin was we call it the Vanna White veto. So this is a veto where governors would strike individual letters from words to create new words or sentences that had never even been written by the legislature. They would just be able to craft whatever they wanted in the law, as long as the kind of words were there as a canvas, the governor could strike it down. In 1990, the people of Wisconsin got sick of that, and they adopted an amendment which said the governor cannot strike individual letters from words as part of this power. But that didn't stop the governors. So going forward, then the governors adopted what was called a Frankenstein veto. This was most infamously used by then Governor Jim Doyle in 2005. Governor Doyle, and the Frankenstein veto was taking words, full words from multiple sentences and striking them out to make a new sentence. So Governor Doyle took a 752 word section of a budget bill and struck it down to just 20 words and combining sentences, paragraphs. And in doing that, he essentially raided the state's transportation fund of $500 million. So nearly $500 million got transferred to the general fund that the people of Wisconsin never intended. In response to that use or abuse, I should say, of the Frankenstein veto, we got another amendment. So that was in 2008. The Frankenstein amendment happened. Now the most recent veto, which we've dubbed the taxation without representation veto unofficially, that the governor has used, the amendment process has begun there. The legislature already passed it through one house. There's a hearing coming up very soon in the other house. Here in Wisconsin, to adopt an amendment, you need two consecutive legislatures to approve of it, and then it goes to the people for a statewide referendum vote. So we're in the early stages here, but hopefully the people of Wisconsin respond to this abuse the same way they've responded to other abuses of this veto power, and rein in this governor's use of the line item veto. And what that amendment does is it says the governor cannot raise taxes or fees with a line item veto. So it's pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Can't raise taxes or fees. And I think it would go a long way. It would certainly prevent the abuse that happened in the most recent budget. And it would ensure that governors going forward don't have that power.
Yeah, this is incredible. What to me, it's stunning, really, that governors would. I mean, I guess think that it's okay. I guess your governor maybe thinks he was using restraint by going for 402 years instead of 502 years. I mean, I don't know. That's stunning to me that someone, that an elected official would do that. It just seems to be absolute disdain, first of all, for the legislature, but ultimately for the people of the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unfortunate. And, you know, the legislature, if it can cobble together a two-thirds majority in both houses, could technically override line item vetoes, just as they could override other vetoes. But, you know, we've got, you know, divided power here in Wisconsin, and they don't have those kind of majorities to be able to do that. Yeah. And so his veto stands today. Now, a future governor, future legislatures, since this is just statutory, what he did, future governor and future legislators could undo this 400-year property tax increase. Right. So hopefully, you know, we at some point that happens to help protect us going forward. But certainly in the short term, it's very unfortunate.
Wait, just a question. I mean, was there blowback when he just did this? Did any reporter say, you know, are you serious? You're doing 402 year to property tax increase? Was there anybody who challenged him on it?
You know, there was a little bit of pushback, but there was also people who were excited about it. I mean, people thought it was a good, some people thought it was a good thing that he was doing this. And that's, I think, shows just how far down the road we've come here in Wisconsin. I mean, this is like fourth grade civics type stuff, that the legislature writes laws, the governor then chooses to veto them or sign them into law, but the governor doesn't get to write laws. And unfortunately, here in Wisconsin, over decades of this line item veto power, we've evolved into this sort of making our executive a super legislature, that he gets to unilaterally determine what the law is with little to no recourse. And there is a lot of pushback in the media here in the state, and it's unfortunate.
So in order for this to get changed, it has to go to a vote of the people. And you say it has to be passed two consecutive legislative sessions by two legislatures. But it doesn't have to be signed by the governor. Is that correct?
No, constitutional amendments do not have to be signed by the governor. Okay. So if we want to take this power away from the governor, and I should say, I'm not aware of any lawsuits challenging this veto yet, but it is potentially an open-ended question if you know, the governor went too far with this veto. Nothing's been filed yet. And if it was, you know, it's certainly, a gray area has exercised this power, but that's what governors in Wisconsin have done. They've just sort of pushed the envelope and pushed that line to take more and more power. And the people of Wisconsin have always responded to that by amending the Constitution to make it clear that those powers don't exist. So the governor does not need to sign constitutional amendments. Two consecutive legislatures pass it, and then it goes to a referendum of the people. If the people approve, it becomes part of the Constitution. And presumably at that point, then it would be a little easier to amend the statutes to get rid of the 400-year property tax, which is part of our statute books right now.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, this clearly, I think, makes state lawmakers kind of irrelevant, that the governor can just make these kinds of changes once they write the law. It essentially allows him to write the law the way he wants it written.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, as lawmakers craft these state budgets, which, like I'm sure in other states, our state budget is thousands of pages long. You know, we spend billions and billions of dollars, but they do it as one bill, and they put so much stuff in that bill that it really opens the door to the governor, who has this incredible amount of power to sort of craft policy proposals the way he wants. Now, that power is not unlimited. You know, back about 6 or 7 years ago in one of the governor's first budgets, he had originally proposed some policy proposals that the legislature removed from the budget. And then he used his veto power afterwards to put those back in. So it was, you know, things like a grant program for battery-powered school buses, I think is what it was at the time, among other things. And we actually represented some clients and challenged those vetoes and were successful at the state Supreme Court here in Wisconsin and got those vetoes struck down. Our court came together and said that those vetoes went too far. Unfortunately, they couldn't agree on – well, they agreed that the vetoes were unlawful. They did not agree on one reason why they were unlawful. So it was a plurality opinion as to why. The end result was that the vetoes got struck down as unlawful, but didn't give us a really clear path going forward to use in the future. So hopefully we'll be able to get that going forward as well. But there is some outer limit on this power. It's just a question of what is it and when are we going to know it?
Yeah. Are there other, I'm sure you've studied this, are there other states? I mean, there's lots of governors that have a line item veto. And again, I think it probably works pretty well in a lot of states, but it's obviously drafted differently than it is in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, are there other states that have a similar problem, or is this really unique to Wisconsin?
So this is something that's really, truly unique to Wisconsin. I think there are something like 46 states that have some form of the item veto power. In most of those states, in all but Wisconsin, essentially, my understanding is that it's a true item veto power, that it doesn't give the kind of minutia details that the governor's allowed to veto like they are here in Wisconsin. And so I'm not aware of anything even close to the abuses that have happened in Wisconsin happening elsewhere. I can't say they haven't for sure, but I've looked and haven't seen anything quite anywhere near what we've had here. And you are right. It's the item veto can be a powerful tool to, you know, rein in special interests and protect taxpayers. And I think that's what it was originally intended for. Unfortunately, it's just become a tool of an all too powerful executive here in Wisconsin to enforce their policy proposals that the legislature, you know, which is the people of Wisconsin acting through the legislature have not wanted. So,
right.
You know, like I said, this amendment is now pending. I am sure that when this one passes, there will probably be something else at some point in the future. Sometimes feels like a game of whack-a-mole here with executive power, but the people of Wisconsin are smart. they've recognized this in the past and have come together to take that power away. And I expect them to do that again here.
Yeah. I mean, this would seem to be something that most voters would find objectionable. I mean, it almost seems like governors who are doing this, and I would say certainly your governor with what he did with the 402-year property tax increase. I mean, that's just gaming the system and you know, doing it at the expense of the taxpayers of Wisconsin. I assume taxpayers are smart enough to figure that out.
Absolutely. And it's something that, you know, like I said, these kinds of abuses have come up time and time again here in Wisconsin. And the people have always responded with it. And it's something you just, I guess it takes a leap of faith to make sure that voters are going to educate themselves and understand what the amendment is and what the vote is that's before them. But I would expect, and I'm hoping, of course, that we can get there. It still needs to pass one House of the legislature and then another legislature next session, which would start in January. But, you know, I do think the people of Wisconsin understand this. It's pretty common sense, right? I mean, like I said, it's fourth grade civics. This is an abuse of power. It's an abuse of power that's, you know, taking more money directly out of the pocketbooks of Wisconsin families. Yeah. And I would expect that they would respond accordingly.
Yeah. So you talked about the Vanna White veto, the Frankenstein veto, and the taxation without representation veto. Which of those do you think was the worst form of this? Was it the original Vanna White one, or what do you think?
I think so. I think that original Vanna White was the most egregious by far, because there you had governors that were, like, you know, striking individual letters to create whole new words that the legislature never even wrote. The Frankenstein veto is right up there too, though, you know, combining individual words from multiple sentences. But that Vanna White veto, that was something that is just absolutely wild. Now, the taxation without representation veto certainly has a lot more direct impact on Wisconsinites, I think. Just because when you allow property taxes to raise like this, it really impacts just about everybody here in the state. So it's that's something that people are really going to feel. So I think as this goes forward, I mean, who knows what the next abuse will be? You know, I think at the end of the day, if you're not going to sort of repeal and recreate the partial veto power completely to be more in line with what other states do, which is just a true item veto, you know, that would be sort of the alternative, I guess, to what I call described as the game of executive power whack-a-mole that we've been playing here for the past couple decades.
Yeah. So if this constitutional amendment passes after it gets through the legislature twice, it's put on the ballot and the people pass it, is there then a normal line item veto, or is that just taken away altogether? What happens with that?
Yeah, so if this amendment passes, it would still keep the governor's line item veto power like he has now. It just puts a further restriction on it that would just say, in no case, the governor can't use that line item veto power to increase any tax or fee. So it would just say that, you know, that's one more way that the governor couldn't use that veto power to prevent these types of abuses from going forward. So if that was in place when the governor issued this last 400-year property tax veto, he wouldn't have been able to do it, because that veto opened the door, obviously, to those tax increases, and it wouldn't have been allowed under this amendment. So,
yeah, that's incredible. Maybe maybe we should just call all of this the King George veto. It's crazy that in America that there is even a state that has allowed this to go on. How did it come about? I mean, do you think it was just sort of slip through the system, or was it more nefarious than that? What's the history there?
Of this particular veto, or?
Yeah. Well, of the, I guess the original one, like what was the purpose of it? Was it just kind of a mess up, or?
Yeah. So it really, I mean, going all the way back to 1930, when this was adopted, I think the original drafting file of the senator who requested the amendment be drafted, it was very simple. He just said, I want an amendment that would allow the governor to veto items of appropriation bills. You know, that's how everything always starts. And then the legislative drafters put the bill together, which kind of takes with that request and puts it into the language that we now find in our Constitution that says a governor could veto an appropriation bill in whole or part. And then, like I said, when it was first passed, there was really nothing. It wasn't used much at all for 40 years. So we went four decades starting in 1930 to the 1970s, where it was barely ever used. And then it kind of started getting used. And then it was Governor Earle and then Governor Thompson who really started these the Vanna White vetoes in earnest to kind of craft these budget bills as they wanted them to. But getting back to the kind of original purpose for it, you know, as I said kind of at the beginning, it really goes back to sort of this progressive era of growing government and growing these state agencies. And you've got this behemoth that became the administrative state that got created. And lawmakers started just packing more and more stuff into these budget bills and doing them as it used to be. Whenever they would have a budget bill, they would pass them individually for these state agencies. But as they grew and they grew and they grew, it just became easier for them to combine them into one. And so the item veto power here in Wisconsin, as happened in other states that have adopted this, was really a reaction to that. It was to give the governor the power to really strike stuff out. I don't think it was ever intended to be used and abused the way that it has been here in Wisconsin, especially over the last three decades when we've had these Vanna White vetoes, the Frankenstein vetoes, the taxation without representation veto. I think the people who originally crafted this and supported it in 1930 would look at the veto power now and say, what is happening? We didn't intend that. This was supposed to make, you know, make these bills smaller, not make them different, I guess is how I would say.
Well, and your current governor is a Democrat, the one who did the 402-year property tax line item veto. But it sounds like it's been both Democrats and Republicans as governors who have abused this in the past?
Yeah. The line item veto power has been used by governors of both parties. It's the executive overreach is a bipartisan effort here in Wisconsin. Like I said, the Vanna White veto was the amendment was adopted when we had a Republican governor. The Frankenstein veto amendment was adopted when we had a Democrat governor. So it really goes, you know, no party has the executives of any party don't really have clean hands here, I guess I would say, in terms of how they've used this veto. The one constant has always been the people of Wisconsin coming together to sort of rebuke the use of that power and make sure that going forward, those kinds of abuses wouldn't happen again. And they've always passed with very large majorities when they go to that statewide referendum. And hopefully this amendment, if it gets to the people of Wisconsin, would enjoy some of that same level of support.
Yeah, this is stunning. I mean, when I first heard about this, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago, I was talking to the AFP Wisconsin state director, and he sort of told me about this, and I just was stunned by it. I never heard anything like this from any other state. It's just incredible. So I appreciate the great work that you all are doing to stop this excess. If people wanted to learn more about what you're doing or learn more about this veto and maybe what they can do to get involved, where's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, so two sources I would direct them to. The first is my organization's website, will-law.org. Some of my colleagues have actually published an analysis of the 400-year veto. So if you just type 400-year veto into the search box on our website, you'll find it. And then the other source would be Americans for Prosperity Wisconsin. They've been really doing a lot of the boots on the ground work here in terms of helping get this amendment through the legislature. And then working with, you know, grassroots supporters all around the state to explain the importance of this, because, you know, obviously, well, the previous two, I'll call them veto fix amendments passed with broad support. It's not like it just happened. You know, people need to understand it. They need to be able to explain what it is and to talk to their friends and neighbors about why this is so important. And AFP has been doing that work, and I would expect that work will continue. So I think, for anybody who's really interested, those are the two sources I would go to find more information out about this and just to keep an eye on sort of what's happening as it moves forward.
All right, Lucas. Well, thank you for joining us, telling us about this, but more importantly, for all the great work that you're doing to bring some fiscal sanity to the governor's office in Wisconsin. It's just an amazing story, but I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on today, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. So this is what an excess. To even imagine that this could happen in the United States with a governor, given our history, given the reason for our founding and, you know, the great debates about separation of powers and diffusing power within government that our founders had, Not only at the federal level, but then in states, as states wrote their constitutions, that same discussion happened in state after state, where we've tried to diffuse power so that an executive didn't have this kind of authority and power. And for it to be abused in this way really is stunning. And then when I heard this, I thought, this is a story we have to bring to our listeners. Hey, thanks for all you do listening and watching American Potential. We've got so many people watching now on YouTube. I think we've got 20,000 subscribers. Again, this podcast is just about a year old, 13 months old. And so for us to have that kind of a growth, we're very proud of that. We had over 12 million views and downloads last year alone. And we're looking to grow that even more. That's because of you for watching and listening to this show. So thank you for that. Remember, liberty and freedom, they're easily taken for granted. Don't take it for granted. Go out there, defend liberty, defend freedom. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.